You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, it's official. No, seriously, it's official. The Republican Party doesn't give a rat's ass about you or me. Recently, I shared with you how on the night that the president was first inaugurated, a group of senior Republican senators and congressmen, including Paul Ryan and Jim DeMint, got together at the caucus room restaurant and pledged to do everything they could to obstruct and destroy his presidency. In fact, Congressman Pete Sessions later told the National Journal that their strategy was derived from the Taliban. He said that they had learned from the Taliban how to disrupt a party or person's patterns, and if they didn't get what they wanted from the president, they would become a Taliban insurgency. Now comes a list, which will almost certainly not show up on GOP TV, a.k.a. Fox so-called News, or on GOP radio, a.k.a. right-wing talk radio, that shows clearly and says loudly the real priorities of this Republican Party, of today's modern. I mean, this is not my dad's Republican Party. This is not even Barry Goldwater's. Well, actually, my dad was a Barry Goldwater and a Dwight Eisenhower Republican. I went door to door for Barry Goldwater. I remember Barry Goldwater would repute. Oh, he would. Anyway, those priorities that are being espoused right now by the modern day Ted Cruz Republican Party have nothing to do with you or me, except in as how they want to let giant transnational corporations and billionaires steal more of our money and destroy more of our nation's commons. How do we know this? Well, because the Republicans have issued their demand list in exchange for their hostage of our nation's debt ceiling. And the list is pretty simple and quite illustrative. I mean, it just lays it right out. In order to raise the debt ceiling so the United States government can pay off bills from George Bush's wars, bills already run up and committed to by the Republican Party, they are demanding that President Obama do the following. First, Republicans say the president must approve the Keystone Pipeline right now. This, of course, is a pipeline owned by a foreign corporation, TransCanada, which will transport foreign Canadian oil from a foreign country, Canada, to refineries owned in part by the Koch brothers along the Gulf Coast, where it will be converted into diesel fuel and gasoline for export to China, Mexico, Brazil, and England. TransCanada itself has said that this pipeline will raise the cost of gasoline in the United States because instead of refining it in the Midwest for domestic uses, like they're doing now, they will be able to refine it at the Gulf seaports where they can load it on giant tankers and ship it to other countries. So for the first Republican priority, billionaires get richer, oil companies get richer, foreign countries get Canadian oil, and Americans who drive get screwed. Oh, and Americans get to keep the pollution and the attendant cancers from the refining process. Second demand, Republicans say the president should postpone giving health care to 50 million uninsured Americans for at least a year. They also want him to cut $120 billion out of the Medicaid program, which is health care for poor people, mostly poor children, the disabled, and the elderly poor. Nobody can quite explain why they are so adamant about this. I mean, if Obamacare is going to be a big failure, you'd think they'd want it to go into effect right now, so the president could have egg on his face in time for the election next year. But really, could it be that they're afraid that people are going to like it? As much as people like Medicare and Social Security, two other programs they fought tooth and nail and still hate? And thus it will be even harder to get rid of in the future? I think so. Third, Republicans demand that the president must abolish or at least substantially weaken the Consumer Protection Bureau. They do not want you or me to be protected from predatory big banks, and they want to make it easier for banksters to get away with multi-billion dollar crimes and multi-million dollar paydays. Pretty incredible when you think about it. I mean, it's frankly astounding that they can even say this with a straight face. Fourth, before they'll pay the bills for Bush's wars, Republicans demand that the president make the big oil industry and its billionaire owners like the Koch brothers even more profitable by cutting back on clean air standards and EPA regulations that save millions of lives and reduce climate change. Oh, and they also want the president to give more of your and my federal lands to the giant oil companies and their billionaire owners for drilling and stuff like that. And what do we get out of this? Nothing. Well, our gas prices go up. What about the Koch brothers who fund the Tea Party Republicans in Congress? What do they get out of it? Billions. If the president doesn't do all these things, these Tea Party Republicans say, that's kind of Paul Ryan wing of the party, they will refuse to raise the nation's debt ceiling so that we can pay for the bills run up by George W. Bush. It's frankly astounding how the Republican Party has officially given up even the pretense of caring about average Americans. They are now proudly the party of the billionaires and the transnational corporations. You know, as a talk show host, I'm wondering, well, as a citizen, as a human, as an American, I'm wondering how they're going to handle this over on Republican radio, you know, the Hannity show, for example, or on GOP TV over at Fox so-called news. Are they going to, like, cover up these demands? Or are they going to figure out some way to frame them where they don't actually tell the average working person what they are? Because, I mean, how long is it going to be before Republican voting working class Americans figure out what the hell is really going on here? This is serious stuff. I mean, the Republicans have basically come out and said, we are going to hold the full faith and credit of the United States, which, by the way, the 14th Amendment says cannot be questioned. So the Republicans are saying, we're going to stick a shiv in the back of the Constitution, right? The hell with the Constitution. We don't care about that. Or at least the 14th Amendment. We are going to, off the Constitution, we are going to throw the nation into default, or at least freeze it up, or both, if we don't get this demand list met. I mean, this is like, you know, some guy's got hostages in the Pizza Hut, you know? Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and these guys. Even people like John McCain are starting to back away from these guys. John McCain, in my mind, is kind of the heir to Barry Goldwater, and I'm not sure there's any Republicans left who are the heirs to Dwight Eisenhower. I think probably Olympia Snow was the last one, and she's gone. But how long is it going to be? Serious question. I mean, do you know any of these folks who vote Republican because they watch Fox News and they listen to the right-wing talk radio and they might read the Wall Street Journal? You know, just basically the right-wing machine, the right-wing bubble, that they live in that right-wing bubble. Just look at the right-wing websites. How can they prevent these simple facts from getting through that bubble to the average American voter? The Joe Sixpack who votes Republican, how are they going to explain to him that the Republicans are willing to bring down our country and the world's economy because they want an oil pipeline going to the Koch brothers refinery on the Gulf Coast so we can ship Canadian oil to China? We keep the pollution. The Chinese get the gasoline. The Canadians get the money. Oh, and the Koch brothers, of course. How are they going to explain that? How are they going to explain, you know, gutting the EPA and doing away and gutting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that's actively prosecuting banksters? How are they going to explain that? I don't get it. Maybe there's a good Republican or conservative out there listening who can explain this to me. I'd love to hear it. 15 minutes, basically.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, 866-987-THOM is our telephone number. If you can explain this to me, if you are a Republican, I'd love to hear from you. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you and Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up? Steve must be you got to listen to your phone, not your radio, because there is a slight delay. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I think this is time the president puts his foot down and says, okay, this is enough.
Well, I think he did in his speech this morning. Did you catch that? He gave a speech where he just blistered the Republicans for this.
Yeah, I watched every minute of it, but I'm talking about the debt ceiling thing.
Yeah, well, he talked about that, too. He said it's crazy. This is the full faith and credit of the United States. He said no Congress in the history of the Republic, going all the way back to George Washington, no Congress has ever threatened this before. This is the first time it's ever happened. And I'd say it's because you've got a bunch of members of Congress who are wholly owned by basically the Koch brothers and a few other cranky billionaires who are really not all that interested, in my opinion, in democracy. They'd rather see this country be an oligarchy.
Well, I got something I'd like him to ask when he goes into negotiations.
Uh-huh.
What the Republicans are asking for all these crazy things.
Right.
I want a transaction tax on Wall Street.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's a great idea.
Okay, right on the table.
Yeah,
the stuff. That'll pay for all the health care. Then you won't have to cry about it no more.
Yep. It'll also
any premiums or nothing.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, Corky. It's a great one. And we had that from the 1920s, maybe it was. Maybe it was the 30s. I don't recall. But anyway, we had that from, you know, my great grandfather's generation right up until 64. And it was done away with in 1964. It was originally put in place, as I recall, to fund the Securities and Exchange Commission, which would mean that probably it was put into place between 33 and 35. And in 64, it was showing such a surplus that they did away with it, like the SEC couldn't use all that money. It shouldn't have been done away with, because with that small tax, 0.1% on every trade, you would not have these, you know, million trades a second going on, this high frequency trading. Mike in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I wanted to mention, that I'd like people to call the Republican representatives and remind them that there is a clause in the Constitution that states for Congress to deny paying debts incurred by Congress, it's actually considered an act of treason for not paying those legitimate debts.
Well, it doesn't quite say that. I mean, what the 14th Amendment says is the validity of the public, this is Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in supporting insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned.
So, well, if I remember,
shall not be questioned.
It mentioned it with treason, but I just can't remember which clause, but
yeah.
I know it.
No, I think you're recalling probably a rant or something, because treason is
it's close enough, because it's our debt, and then they also need to consider, hey, all the civilized countries, our allies such as England, Canada, Australia, they have pretty much had socialized health care since World War II.
Sure.
And so we need... It wouldn't hurt us to have a government-paid health care. England does it, and they've had it since World War II.
Yeah,
and there's no problems with it.
Yeah, and Germany's had it since the 19th century. I mean, this goes back a long ways, and none of these countries are, you know, why is it that nobody is trying to pick up the American system? Nobody around the world is trying to pick up the American system. Instead, as countries become more advanced, they try to pick up the European systems. I mean, this should be just obvious. Mike, thanks for the call. Stephanie in Parker, Colorado, listening on AM760 in Denver. Hey, Stephanie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd just like to try to attempt to maybe answer the question, you know, what the right-wing media outlets are telling people. And I think it's flat-out lies, because, I mean, I will say myself and my little sister are the only liberals in the family. My family is diehard conservative. And I just find, like, I try to strike up conversations with them, and I just find that they're completely uninformed on everything. Like, my mother thinks the Keystone Pipeline will give America oil independence from the Middle East. And,
TransCanada doesn't say that's its goal. TransCanada publicly says that the price of gasoline in the United States is going to go up 15 cents a gallon because they're going to export all that gas.
Right. So, I mean, obviously the right-wing media outlets are not going to say that. And right. I think people, they're just going to believe the lies, because I don't know if it's because they're so set in their ways and they don't want to face the picture of this new...
Well, nobody likes having their worldview challenged. That's a scary thing.
Exactly.
So I think that there's a piece to that. It's you know, don't confuse me with facts. My mind is made up, sort of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Stephanie, thank you very much. A very insightful comment. Jeff in West Glover, Vermont. Hey, Jeff. What's up?
Hello, Jeff, how are you?
I am fine. We have a minute to the break. It's yours.
Hello. There is a solution for all the global catastrophes we're going through.
Okay.
It's everybody should plant a seed. Well, it's illegal to plant a seed. Is it not?
Illegal to plant a seed?
Yes.
If it's a pot seed, it's illegal to plant it.
Hemp. Hemp is that's not pot, is it?
No, it's not. Oh, you're saying that hemp is the solution to the world's problems.
Yeah, hemp would be the solution.
Yeah. No, I get it. I don't think it's the solution to the world's problems, but I think it's a solution. It's a positive thing. And thanks a lot for the call. The solution to the world's problems, it's a little more complicated than hemp. I think that we need to resacralize the world. We need to see it once again as a living organism and ourselves as part of it. We need to recognize our interconnectedness with other people. We need to, it's kind of back to Jesus 101 or pick your religion. I mean, they all say the same thing, basically. Care for the poor, feed the hungry, heal the sick, clothe the naked, house the homeless, and build a society in which men and women and people of all races are empowered.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And when we do those simple things, you know, that Jesus was the original liberal stuff, the world becomes a better place. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and 27, 28 minutes BF before the hour or thereabouts. And, you know, this question, why, you know, what's the deal? The Republicans have just come right out and said in front of God and everybody, we're going to blow up the full faith and credit of the United States in violation of the 14th Amendment, something that's never been done by any Congress in the history of America. Ever. No president has ever been confronted with this blackmail threat. Ever. That they're going to do this if they don't get their pipeline so that the Koch brothers can make more money and China can get oil from Canada. They don't get their pipeline. If we don't stop hassling the banks by dialing back the Consumer Protection Bureau, if we don't stop hassling the refineries owned by the Koch brothers and others by dialing back the EPA, quote, regulations, how can anybody look at this and say anything other than the Republican Party are shills for billionaires and transnational corporations, period, full stop? I mean, they've even given up the pretense of God, gays, and guns. They're not saying that they want Obama to end gay marriage or they want him to put women in jail who get abortions or that they want him to ban birth control or that they want him to... double the penalty on pot. I mean, you know, they've just given up all pretense on these so-called social issues. The stuff that they used to, that they want more prayer in the schools, that's not even part of it, right? I mean, this is the stuff that they used to use to rope in the rubes, right? Oh, this will play well in Oklahoma. We're going to put the Ten Commandments on the front of the courthouse. Yes, indeed. We're going to make that the centerpiece. Yeah, everybody's going to vote for that. And then when we get in power, what do? We give the billionaires a tax cut. But they're not even doing this. I mean, it's not. I'm personally astounded. I've been doing this program for about a decade, and I don't think that I've ever seen the Republican Party so nakedly say to the world, "We are not here for the people. We don't give a rat's patootie about the people. This has got nothing to do with working people. We don't. You know, it's all about increasing the wealth of the oil billionaires and the bank billionaires. Because, by the way, didn't you know, they fund the Republican elections. And they fund the Tea Party challengers to the Republicans in Congress that the Republicans in Congress are terrified of. So how long is it going to take for the average American to catch on? Bill in Quad City, Oklahoma. Right there in red state country. Hey, Bill, your thoughts? Bill? We got to remind our call screener to tell people not to listen to the TV, but to listen to their telephones. It just, you know. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin.
I got a good one for you,
okay.
Brother Tom.
Okay.
Vernon Buchanan.
Okay.
The representative for Sarasota, Florida.
Right.
Multi-millionaire.
Right.
Lives in a multi-million-dollar house on Longboat Key.
Right.
Magically, the newspaper did an article about him. He came into $50 million with a little printing company, but he's also real tight with Dick Cheney, so
right.
One can wonder what they printed.
Right.
But anyway, Tuesday night, he and the House Republicans voted to keep the socialized flood insurance program intact and not raise the prices to the market-based price of the private sector. You know how
because the flood insurance is mostly protecting the wealthy mansions along the beaches and the fancy parts of Florida. Right, I got it. Okay, brilliant. Armin, thank you for sharing that. Surprise, surprise. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve.
Yes, I wanted to make a couple of points. And I think one of the ways that in which the Republicans sometimes seemingly win the arguments, at least the hearts and minds of some people, is that they manipulate facts. They either, one, want to refute science when it's very convenient for them to do so. You know, this is sort of unimaginative, rather unimagined by people like myself who spent a lifetime trying to understand scientific methodology, research, and so forth. And the answer to any sort of science founded in peer review, founded in sound methodology is, you know, it's just a bunch of lies predicated upon this leftist thinking from people in universities. This is their response to science. They can't offer a counter to the actual argument. And this is what you find when it comes to things like global warming, health care. Global warming, this is the new one this week. There's record ice in the Antarctic from year to year. Not mentioning for a moment that the reason that you've got record ice growth in the Antarctic is that you had record melting.
Right.
In recent years. And it's not as if the people who talk about global warming as a threat are saying that tomorrow the Earth is going to get hot and nowhere on Earth is it ever going to get cold again. The question is, how much ice do we lose and then how much of it comes back? So in order for us to get the record growth in ice in the Antarctic, guess what? We had record loss
right.
in the previous season.
Yeah, in the Arctic, yeah. Yeah, well, and the Antarctic as well. Yes, you're absolutely right, Steve. And it's like they it's like a lie by omission because they tell half the story. It's you're absolutely right. Thanks for the call on that. Susan in Brunswick, Georgia. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Great. So you have a theory on Republicans?
Yes, I certainly do. I had two food for thought that I wanted to throw out there. First of all, I live in South Georgia. I think I'm the only Democrat in this area. And what they're doing right now is they've got signs on their cars and driving around town saying not to listen to liberal media and also don't participate in Obamacare.
Wow.
So I think that that's really interesting. But my comment that's really important that I really wanted Republican listeners that are listening to the program out there to think about this scenario. I have a friend who's an NRA member, diehard conservative their whole lives, and always just spoke about cutting programs and this and that because they think it's poor black people that are just mooching on the system. And unfortunately, the husband got cancer, was not able to work, but he applied for, and rightly so, applied for Social Security disability, and they did get it. And they also applied for hospice, and they also got that as well. And both of those programs are 100% paid by the government.
Right. And 100% promoted by liberals over
They don't make the connection. And people that want to cut these programs out don't realize that if, God forbid, that they get stricken with cancer, these programs are out there to help you. And if that program of Social Security disability and hospice was taken off of the table, they would have been out on the street.
Yep.
And the reason why these people want to get rid of all of that is because they don't think that they're ever going to get sick and that they're never going to have to apply for that.
Right.
And they don't make the connection.
Yeah, it
and
can't happen.
I'm glad
happen
that
here.
She was able to get on those programs for her husband. Unfortunately, he passed away. But when I tried to make that comment to her, they just don't get it. And
even after they experienced
it. I really
want
it. Republicans that are listening to the program to really think about that. If you should get sick, the first, and when you lose your job because you can't work when you have really bad cancer, the first thing that these people are going to do, apply for Social Security disability.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you, Susan. You said it really, really well. I appreciate the call. Jeff in Langston, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Lancaster. Doing, my apologies. Fine. What's up?
You know, you have a very interesting show on today because I think I was down to I'm a 100% disabled Vietnam vet, and I was helping veterans try to get jobs today at the AMVETS here, and I'm probably the only Democrat in the whole place.
Wow.
Or independent sometimes, but I think it all started with Ronald Reagan. Because this is why I feel this way, and I think things build. The baby boomer generation, when they were protesting the war, I was in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. What were they against the most? The government.
Yeah, right. Lyndon Johnson's trying to kill us.
And I saw Ronnie Baby. I forget how he framed that, but he said the problem is the government.
Right. In fact, it was in his first inaugural address. He said that the government is not the solution to our problems. The government is the problem.
That is it. That is it. And I think it just built from there.
Yeah.
I also think that the way they frame programs such as Citizens United, I guarantee you, where I was at today, I could have look to the person to the left and to the right and say, do you know what Citizens United was? And I know they would have said no.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound like a bad thing, does it?
Right, right. This is like that university study that they did 2 years ago where they found that people who watch Fox News are actually more misinformed about the world than people who watch no news at all.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand people that I know you know, went to college, got good grades, and they buy into this.
That's the famous Reagan Democrats, and I think you're onto something there, Jeff. Because, you know, many of us did protest our government, in the case of Vietnam, and then Reagan came along and kind of gave a different kind of voice to that same sentiment, and drew in, and they called them the Reagan Democrats, and a lot of Democrats started voting Republican with him. I think you're right. It all started with Reagan. As my wife says, it's going to be on my tombstone. Thanks, Jeff.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, I think I have a website. It all started with Reagan.com. Or it all began with Reagan.com. Anyway, we'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, with you. And, well, I was, whoops, where'd he go? He popped around. Bill in Cause City, Oklahoma. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope you're well.
I am. I'm kind of well. I have been furiously writing my congressmen, my senators the last few days. I'm a Republican, but I don't know if you're like me. When you get on a plane, you hope there's a competent pilot up there and a navigator.
Yes.
With someone like what we saw Tom Cruise do yesterday,
Ted Cruz,
at the helm, I think I would have grabbed the parachute really quick.
Yeah,
which I'm getting ready to do. I'm going to change parties.
Seriously,
I think the the Republican Party is in total disarray. I mean, they are a group that can't get their act together. The Obamacare is something the American people want. There's something that people can look at with pride in the United States of America. I want to say the Republican Party can find lots of money when it comes time to go into war, but can't find a dollar and want to hold the United States of America hostage, disallowing the articles in the Constitution of the United States, and want to create something that we've never seen before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing thing, Bill. It's an amazing thing. Danielle and Shano tell me that they want to nominate you for to be our book recipient for the day. So may I send you an autographed copy of my book, Screwed?
I would really appreciate it.
Okay, Bill.
I really appreciate your program. I appreciate Free Speech TV. I will be a contributor. I just recently started watching it. Also, Link, Amy Goodman's a hero of mine.
Yeah, she's great.
And as you are, too. So well, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bill. I'm going to put you on hold here. And Bill's on line 9 for whoever's grabbing the – I think Dylan is grabbing the line there. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Make that 2, T-W-O, 2 tombstones.
How so?
He said, on your tombstone, your wife says...
It all started with Reagan?
It all started with Reagan.
Yeah.
You're not alone there, buddy boy.
Yeah, you're going to say the same thing, huh? Okay.
Yeah, two quick items. One about something you said the other day about Bernie Sanders, which I was not aware of. And the other item is about this funding that's been diverted from supporting Free Speech TV, Link TV, Pacifica Radio, and other independent nonprofits towards political candidates.
Right.
So I want to comment on that first.
Okay.
I think that if what you're saying is true, and I don't doubt it, my suggestion is to those people with the deep pockets who are listening to your broadcast today, they should rethink their strategy and do the 60-40, 60% towards the media, because the media is what matters. You got
to. Hey, I've been saying this.
In order for the votes to follow.
There's a small group of us who have been screaming this at the Democratic Party for a long, long time. There are like 4 Democratic senators that I know who get it, that Republicans would not have a prayer in American politics if they did not have a strong right-wing television and radio media infrastructure, which is owned and subsidized in many cases by very wealthy Republicans. And the Democrats have nothing like that whatsoever. And frankly, they should.
Right.
And so, yeah, I agree with you, Johnny. And but back to the point about Bernie and
then
healthcare.
On the idea of universal healthcare, I was under the impression that Bernie Sanders was in favor of universal healthcare being administered mostly with national standards. The idea of having it totally, and correct me if I'm wrong, but totally administered or interpreted by state-by-state basis would mean that our so-called governor here in the Lone Star State, he would totally screw that around.
Yeah, no,
so
I think there's...
education
right,
being
yeah.
screwed over by Texas morons who decide textbooks. Why not have national standards and then have a small role played by states to accommodate specific conditions locally, but that has to be approved, just like the Voting Rights Act?
Sure. I should not be representing Bernie's positions on the radio. I think that the way that you described it right now is a more accurate description of his position on national health care, on single-payer national health care, than my saying yesterday that he just thinks it should be administered by the states and as opposed to the federal government. I think that the nuance that you added to it is probably more accurate. And in fact, you know, he's going to be on the show tomorrow. We can ask him. Okay? But Johnny,
that's the key. That's what happens here, but not elsewhere.
No, I think you're right. And also, you know, there's very poor states, and you don't want, you know, like West Virginia, for example, or Louisiana, really poor states. You don't want them to have poor health care just because it's a poor state. And this is why we, you know, have a federal Department of Education. It's why we should be helping with health care. I'm with you, Johnny. I'm absolutely with you. So how much time do we have? About a minute and a half. Okay, great. Bobby in Crivitz, Wisconsin. Hey, Bobby, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, I'm actually in Denver. They got my information mixed up.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
no problem.
Guess who's advertising during your show here in Denver?
Who's that?
I've heard two Walmart commercials already.
Oh, well, that's great.
Your program.
That's great. I'm glad that they're supporting Progressive Talk Radio. God bless them.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I think it's hysterical.
Anyway, yeah, right? Especially when you want to listen to your shows.
You know, there's actually, there was some good news about Walmart today. In fact, it was we had it in our newscast that I think it was Fortune Magazine was writing about it, that Walmart is actually starting. Where did we go? Is it the last story? Yeah, here it is. Public opposition to Walmart's awful labor practices is having an effect after years of protests by workers. The low-wage employer announced that they're going to finally make some positive changes. They're moving 35,000 part-time employees to full-time and going to give them health care benefits. And I think this is because they rated dead last in the American Customer Satisfaction Index. And according to Forbes, this is what Forbes magazine said. Walmart's business is going south due to the company's penchant for putting politics and the squeeze on Walmart employees ahead of the kind of customer satisfaction that produces prosperity over the long term. End of quote. So,
Tom Hartman.
Anyhow, Bobby, you had a quick comment you wanted to make about Ted Cruz. We've got just a couple seconds.
I mean, it seems like if that he wasn't doing official senatorial business, if it wasn't. It seems like he should have to pay for the electric bill for having the lights on and the cameras rolling and all that.
Yeah, there you go. That's an idea. Thank you, Bobby.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the second hour of our program. We have had, the president's Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, all this sort of thing. People, as he was giving his speech this morning, he was talking about how on Tuesday people are going to be able to sign up for the exchanges. The prices are out in a lot of the states. The information is out there. Yet still, a lot of people are confused about this. Exactly what is it? What's in it? Personally, I don't think the White House has done a particularly spectacular job of messaging it. But there are some folks who really have been paying attention and really have become experts on this. Igor Volsky is one of them. He is the managing editor for the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org, and he's the co-author of the book Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. And Igor is going to stay with us for the full 45 minutes right through till to our newscast, or 50 minutes, until our talk radio news at 10 minutes before the hour. So, Igor, welcome back to the program. You've been on our program before.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
It is great to have you. And I just want to let people know that you're perfectly willing to take questions. So if you have questions about Obamacare, and I have a few I'm going to start off with, but if you have questions, if you're on the line with other things to talk about, our call screener is going to come on and ask you to drop off to open up the lines for people with Obamacare questions. If you have questions about Obamacare, just give us a call, and Igor will do his very best to answer them. So the first question that I had for you, Igor, is, we run a small business here, and this program, and between our radio show and our TV show, I think we have, I don't know, about 10 or 12 full-time employees and a couple of part-time employees, and we give everybody health insurance. We have forever. I mean, every business that Louise and I have ever owned, we've given everybody health insurance. And we're trying to figure out if our health insurance is as good as, better than, or worse than the best of the Obamacare plans, and should we do as some other businesses have and let our employee, give our employees the money so that they can buy it themselves, or should we do it? But we haven't been able to find the details of the plans, and it seems like it's going to vary. Being here in D.C., we've got employees who live in Virginia, employees who live in Maryland, and employees who live in D.C., and as well as actually a couple of other states. Our webmaster, for example, is in Tennessee. So what do we do?
Well, Tom, the good news is that on average, what you're probably offering your employees, and by the way, good for you for offering that coverage.
We're offering a pretty top-of-the-line program from Aetna Blue Cross. It pretty much covers absolutely everything.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine the way it's going to work in the exchanges is you're going to have different tiers of coverage. And so if you want a little less coverage and to pay less premiums, you would have to choose the cheaper option. The top level, the so-called platinum plan, I would imagine is probably comparable to what you are offering your workers now. And the good news is that come next Tuesday, you're going to be able to compare and see. And it's really the first time that you are going to compare really apples to apples, because before there was so much fine print and all these policies, it was hard to tell what's what. Now they've really standardized this thing with Obamacare on the website, and you can really tell what you're getting and decide then if you want to switch. So it's going to be up to you, and you're going to be able to figure it all out in a really, for the first time, a pretty clear and transparent way.
If any of our employees were to say, you know, okay, you know, the health insurance plan that you pay for us, you give us, is all well and good, but I would really like to just get my own health insurance plan. Maybe they're thinking, this person might be thinking about, you know, moving on to another job, or maybe they want to go part time, or they just want to have control of their own health insurance plan, or whatever. There's a whole lot of different reasons why an individual might want to do that. And this isn't, you know, I'm asking this in the context of my business, but it's also a abstract question. I think, you know, all employees are probably wondering. Right now, as a corporation, as a small, we're a sub-S corporation, but we're incorporated as a small business, we can deduct the cost of our employees' health insurance from any money that the show makes to, it's kind of subsidized by the IRS in a certain way. You know, it's a tax deductible expense. If one of my employees comes to me and says, take me off the company policy, I'm going to buy the Maryland, you know, platinum plan myself, and by the way, it's going to cost me, you know, $300 a month. Would you please give me the $300 a month? A, does that become then a taxable event for them? Am I now, are they getting a pay raise? And so their personal income taxes are going up. B, is that, or is there a way for me to do that we can simply designate that as health insurance money? And is it tax deductible to us as a company? I mean, how does that work?
Well, there are two different exchanges that will open starting October 1st. One is this individual exchange that we've heard so much about, and that's where if somebody wants to move on from the Tom Hartman program and they need health care, they'll go to that exchange and they'll compare policies and sign up and see if they're eligible for tax credits and go on from there. Mm-hmm. Second exchange is the so-called shop exchange, and that's the exchange specifically designed for small businesses, for businesses up to about 100 employees, and states have some leeway in playing with that number. So it's going to depend on what the regulation in your particular state is. But the shop exchange is designed for this very purpose, so that you, as a small business, can enter the shop exchange, and you're going to have insurers offering policies, and you can take your employees with you. And in that exchange, it's going to work just like the other exchange, where you'll be able to see if they are eligible for any kind of help. The deductibility, though, doesn't continue. So while employer coverage, as you pointed out, is heavily subsidized by the government, it's one of the biggest deductions in the tax code. You know, you hear a lot from conservatives that, oh, we can't have government in our health care and government take over. Well, the truth is the same folks who are saying that have this kind of big tax subsidy through the tax code. But Obamacare doesn't extend that tax, that same deduction. It does offer subsidies.
That's interesting. So as a business, if we go into the business exchange, we can no longer deduct the cost of the health insurance, but we do get a subsidy. Is the subsidy
I believe it's that as a business, you can continue deducting the coverage.
Okay.
As an individual, though, I think that's where it changes, because
the point is
you can't get the deduction on both ends, both
right,
in terms of the tax code and then the subsidy.
Right. Okay. And is it possible for some employees to stay on a non-Obamacare program and others to say, I'm just going to go with the Obamacare plan?
That's one of those glitches that you keep hearing about. The design of the law intended for that to be possible from day one. They're running into some technological difficulties in figuring that out, and I think that's option is going to be available next year, that kind of split that you're talking about.
Right. Okay. So for the moment, then, basically, if you work for a company and you're getting health insurance and that company chooses to continue offering that health insurance from that provider, whatever it may be, in all probability, your best bet is to just stay with that for the time being.
Yes. Yes, and you are, as an employee of that company, are going to have that one choice that the company, if they take you into the exchange, has selected.
Right. And if you bail out of that, you can buy private health insurance for yourself on the private exchange, but it's on your own nickel and it's not deductible.
Yes.
And if the employer wanted to compensate the employee, that would be considered compensation. So if an employee needed, say, $300 a month to buy it on the exchange, you'd probably have to actually give them like $400 a month to cover their taxes, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that makes a lot of sense, and I understand how this works. We've got a bunch of callers with questions for you. We're talking with Igor Volsky. He is the managing editor over at the Center for America's Think Progress blog, the author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform, and an expert on Obamacare. He's taking your calls and questions right after this break. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Be sure and check out Igor's blog over at thinkprogress.org. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your questions for Igor Volsky of the Center for American Progress's thinkprogress.org blog about Obamacare. Right. Welcome back. John Hartman here with you. Igor Volsky taking your calls on Obamacare. What does it mean? How does it affect you? Joe in Glencoe, Illinois. And by the way, Igor's blog is over at thinkprogress.org. He's the managing editor of the whole blog, but he's the expert, and one of the country's experts on health insurance and or on Obamacare, rather. And he wrote the book, Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. Joe in Glencoe, Illinois. You're on the air with Igor.
Hi. I was calling because there was a good article this summer by David Mulberg in Indies Times that outlined some strengths and weaknesses of the program, the strength being that if your health care coverage as an individual is relatively limited to 10% of your income. However, if you're provided with an option through your employer and you turn it down, you won't be eligible in the exchanges, and there's no caps on what they can charge for dependent care coverage. So if you're offered an option at work that has extremely high cost for dependents, it's going to make healthcare possibly unaffordable.
Yeah, that's really a regulatory problem that came about because the law wasn't specific enough. You know, you'll remember when Obamacare was passed, there was a House version, a Senate version, and then we all thought it'd go into a conference committee and they'd come together in a unified bill. That didn't happen. Scott Brown was elected in Massachusetts, and so you never had an opportunity to kind of work out some of the quirks in the law, and that's one of them. And they tried to fix that problem in the regulatory process, and they weren't able to. And so now you do have this issue where the coverage that you get for your dependents doesn't count towards that cap. So, you know, there are going to be some problems like that. More are going to be uncovered as people start signing up. And what eventually I think will be needed is a legislative fix to take care of this thing. But, you know, advocates have always said that Obamacare is kind of a starter home and you're going to have to add on and make changes and adapt as you see, how to improve this thing. But that's certainly a problem that advocates have been pointing to for a long time.
Okay. Jimmy, and this is, you know, just to forgive the politics, but it would be so nice if the Republicans were talking about fixing small things like this in the program rather than, you know, doing 21-hour filibusters to defund the whole thing. Anyhow, Jimmy, you're on the air with Igor Volsky. Jimmy in Berryville, Arkansas.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello, your question?
Yes. Say you're just a nominal human being and you haven't been paying health care over the years, mainly because you couldn't afford it, okay?
Right.
Hello?
Yeah, no, we're listening.
Okay. you know, you can't afford it. And now, all of a sudden, you've got 30 million people now are subject to being forced to afford it, whether you can or not. And now, excuse me, I think that maybe the people that want to sell insurance are just looking at this and they're going, now just how many more people can we catch? Because the right. truth is, when it comes to the medical industry, a person can have $1.5 million worth of medical bills. And
so, Jimmy, your point is that this is a boon to the healthcare industry or the health insurance industry. I think everybody agrees on that, although their profits have been capped by this program. They weren't before. But I'm curious, if you don't mind, what's your annual income?
Oh, about $13,000, $14,000.
Okay, so Igor, how much is it going to cost Jimmy to buy Obamacare now that he's being forced to by the government?
Well,
I have no idea.
Jimmy, hang on. Let's ask Igor and let him tell you.
You're right. The $1 million in healthcare costs accrue very, very quickly, particularly if you have a chronic condition, you're in an expensive accident. And that's why the need to carry a health insurance is a critical one, because you don't want to pass those costs on to the system.
Right. So we've got Jimmy here. He's 55, and he's making around $15,000 a year down in Arkansas. How much is it going to cost him to buy Obamacare?
The average premiums that were released just last week would probably suggest that given his age, given his income bracket, he's going to be able to go into the exchange, he's going to qualify for subsidies, and will probably be able to find coverage that's between about $150 and $350. That's just the general average.
Per month or per year?
Per month. Of
now, what if he doesn't have $150 or $300?
Well, then he would find a policy that's cheaper. There, the policies again go
at,
by
at an income level of $15,000 a year. Isn't he fully subsidized?
The subsidies at that level will certainly be far more. How much he would pay at that income level, I can't tell you. That it's the calculations there require a calculator, and he can go to Kaiser Family Foundation or TuesdayToHealthcare.gov and figure that out, because the subsidies are directly pegged to your income. So the math there, I can't do over this.
Right. Okay. But my understanding was that somebody with that level of income, because that's sort of at the poverty level in the United States.
I should have clarified that those numbers, that range I offered, is probably not for someone at his income level. Those are general numbers that we've seen, averages that we've seen that the government has put out.
Because my understanding is with the subsidies, somebody at that income level might end up paying $15, $20 a month, $30, $40 a month, maybe at the high end?
Or? Yes, it would depend on many factors, but that generally sounds plausible.
Okay, all right. Jimmy, have we answered your question?
Well, I guess.
Okay, Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We've got news at the bottom of the hour, and then Igor Volsky will be back taking your calls 5 minutes from now on Obamacare. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And be sure to check out Igor's blog, or the blog that Igor is the managing editor for, thinkprogress.org. It's a brilliant resource. Welcome back. It's Obamacare Hour. We're taking Igor Volsky of the Center for American Progress's thinkprogress.org blog, and author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Healthcare, Real Healthcare Reform, and an expert on Obamacare, is on the line with us for 45 minutes here answering your questions. Igor, you're still here?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let's pick up some calls here. Paul in Hudson, Mass. You're on the air with Igor Volsky.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Igor. My question is, I've been hearing an awful lot about, I watch a lot your show and a lot about, what's been going on with Obamacare. It seems to me that most of the larger companies that I know of already provide medical insurance plans for their employees. And they provide, they usually pay about half, maybe more, for most employees. I know there are companies out there that try to keep people all part-time so that they don't have to provide medical insurance, and which is, I think, is, you know, not a great thing for them to do, of course. But it seems like this affects more the people who are uninsured, you know. It makes medical insurance accessible to them and more affordable for them, because it, you know.
So
it,
your question, Paul.
Expensive. Well, my question is the ones in the middle somewhere, the companies that are being forced to provide their employees, if they have over 100 employees or 50 employees, or I'm not sure how many, are they being told that they have to pay a certain percentage of the premiums?
The companies that are going to have to either offer what's considered equitable coverage or pay a penalty do have to offer a certain benchmark of coverage, and there are guidelines of what's considered acceptable coverage, because you want to make sure the coverage your employer is kind of getting away with offering and meeting that requirement is coverage that works for people. So it's not a percentage of premium, but it is, coverage has to cover certain things. It has to have a certain value, what's referred to as actuarial value. It has to cover a certain percentage of costs. And so that's the way it's going to be calculated for when that requirement kicks in now in 2015, because it's been delayed.
Now, to the question of, you know, I mentioned earlier, we provide health insurance to our employees. We pay 100%. In fact, it never frankly occurred to us to pay anything less. For a company that pays less than 100%, yeah, and everybody, I just got applause from the peanut gallery here. For companies that pay less than 100%, when people make up that balance, is that out of their after-tax income that they're making up the balance? And if the company picks up Obamacare because they're required to, do they have the option of saying, okay, we're only going to pay for half of it and you have to pay the other half?
Well, the company, when they go into the exchange, when the small business goes into the exchange starting on Tuesday, or when large companies start bringing their employees into the exchange in 2017, they're going to be looking through the plans that are meet the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. So those are the kind of comprehensive coverage plans we've been talking about that have different.
But the question is, does that act require employers to pay a minimum percentage of the cost, you know, that they can't dump, they can't say to their employees, okay, we're going to pick up 20% of the cost in order to meet
the way it's calculated is the employer, the employee has to spend, I think it's 8 or 9% of their income on the coverage you're offering as an employer, then the coverage you're offering is not affordable coverage, and that employee can then go into the exchanges and apply for subsidies in the exchanges, and you as the employer are going to basically pay a penalty that's going to go towards covering the subsidies your employee is receiving because the coverage you offered him was not good enough.
I see. Okay, so it's going to be if the employer is not paying the full load, then the employee part that is picked up is going to be calculated as a percentage of that employee's income rather than as a percentage of the cost of the plan.
Yes, that's
okay. Great. Thank you. Jim in Chicago. Hey, Jim, you're on the air with Igor.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. In a few months, I'll be retiring and moving to the Philippines, where I will not have access to, nor will I need U.S. health insurance. So how will this Obamacare affect me?
You know, I don't know in terms of the Philippines. I don't know what the provisions there are. There are certainly exemptions from the mandate. I don't know in terms of your move, though, how that would work for you.
Okay. David in Little River, California. You're on the air with Igor Volsky.
Yeah, I'm David, and my question is, my wife and I are on Blue Cross, CalCOBRA Blue Cross. Costs us $1,400 a month. In December, I go on Medicare, and I want to go with Kaiser, and my wife wants to stay with Blue Cross. Is that possible to do?
So you are going to be eligible for Medicare in December.
Yeah.
And you want to select a, I guess you're just selecting the private plans in Medicare, so you're selecting a Medicare Advantage plan, and you want to know if you can have one plan and your wife can have another.
That's correct.
Yes, you should be able to do that.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
When it comes to Jimmy earlier, I checked covered Cal, and if I were only making $15,000 a year, as near as I can tell, you just sign up and you're covered.
In California.
No cost to you.
Yeah, the problem is in Arkansas, if the state does not take the Medicare coverage, the Medicare expansion, he may be one of those people who falls into that crack between the, that crack that Igor was talking about. Okay. Oh, I see. Oh, Danielle just looked it up for that state, and she said without the Medicaid expansion, it would be $280 a year that he would pay, making $15,000 a year, 55-year-old in Arkansas.
And is that before or after the subsidy?
That's post-subsidy, right? Yeah, that's post-subsidy.
Okay.
David, thank you for the call. And Jeff, in Midvale, Utah, you are on the air with Igor.
Hi. I had a couple of points to make on an unrelated subject, but about having to do with disability. But so as far as I understand it, though, is we're states that aren't taking the Medicaid expansion, and I'm in one that's basically, I think, stalling until the very, very end, Utah. And so does that essentially mean I'm one of the people who fall through the cracks since I'm disabled and gross about $10,000 a month?
Well, are you on Medicaid now?
No, I actually can't afford the spend down.
That's the spend down. Yeah, talk about existing problems in the healthcare system. Do you have any kind of healthcare coverage now?
I have Medicare, but it's really not adequate for my conditions, and the bills are, well, mounting. We'll put it that way.
It sounds like you're in that sliver of people who are kind of a little bit in no man's land in terms of, where to turn and how to get more affordable coverage.
Unless his state picks up the Medicare expansion.
Yeah, unless your state. And the good news is, look, I have to just say just generally is that Kathleen Sebelius, who's the health secretary for the president, is really keen on working out specific deals with Republican governors so they could swallow Medicaid expansion. And a lot of times that means working out these private options to involve more private insurers in the Medicaid program, which a lot of progressives don't like, and a lot of the times they don't work very well. They're very inefficient. But she makes these deals so that you bridge that gap. And she's been very good at it. And several, Pennsylvania, for instance, you got a Republican governor running for reelection there. She made a deal with him. They're not now going to expand Medicaid in Pennsylvania. So there's some hope that in the final hour, the federal government working with Utah can maybe bridge that gap.
Okay. Frank in Minneapolis, listening on KPNF. You're on the air with Igor Volsky.
Yes, hello. I'm curious about my retirement plan. Currently, Pacer 50% roughly of all my medical bills and expenses, and I'm just turning 62. I'm wondering if somehow picking up Obama will help me fill in the gap.
Yeah, you should be if your employer pays for your coverage and you're retired.
Well, it comes through the union, but yeah, it's part of the retirement thing.
Okay. Okay. I mean, if you you can certainly go into the website and see what's available in your area. The question is, will you be eligible for subsidies? And since you do have another source of coverage, you probably won't be. But certainly you can go and see if that's something you can afford without that aid.
Okay.
Thank you.
Frank, thanks a lot for the call. And Igor, we just have like 20 seconds before the break here. So we'll pick up a couple more of our Free Speech TV callers right after the break. But how many states have that gap where they haven't accepted Medicare yet?
I was looking through it, and I think it's, I want to say, I off the top of my head, I think it's about 20s of states who...
Okay, and these are all states presumably with Republican governors or Republican legislatures that control them.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Igor Volsky with us. Be sure to check out his blog, thinkprogress.org, and the blog that he's the managing editor of, and his book, Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
That is thinkprogress.org, Igor's work, Igor Volsky. Are they? Welcome back, 10 minutes before the hour. Talk Radio News is not calling in. Huh. Well, call Igor back up and see if he can, get back on the phone, and call Igor right now. And Shano? Let's get him back on, because we still have some questions. People have questions for him, and I thought Talk Radio News was coming in, but apparently we got skipped. Okay, he's on? Oh, we're trying to get him. Okay, thank you. Good. And, we'll see where it goes with this. It's fascinating to me that there's such an effort on the part of Republicans to kill this thing, to prevent Obamacare, and yet people all across America, and I mean, we've got calls literally from all across America, have very real questions about, how does this work? How do I get on? And they're not calling up and saying, this government's going to... Well, we had one guy. The government's going to force me to buy health insurance. And it turns out, but it's going to be really cheap. And if his state gets, Medicaid expansion, it's going to be nothing. So we'll see. Is Igor available? Oh, okay. Yeah, please put him on the board so I can put him on the air. Okay. Thanks. Hang on just a second here, and okay. Igor, welcome back.
Tom, long time no see.
Indeed. Thank you. Let's pick up some more of these questions here. Carlo in Chicago, you have a question for Igor.
Hello?
Hey, Carlo, you're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
I have a question. I'm married and I have two kids, and we live in Illinois, obviously we're in Chicago. And we're on Medicaid. Everything that we get is paid for, everything. My wife had the babies, birthed them, stayed in the hospital. I had an emergency a couple years ago, airlifted from one hospital next. We didn't pay anything out of pocket. How is this new system going to affect us?
It's not going to affect you. You're going to continue receiving the coverage you've had, the coverage you're happy with, and Obamacare is not going to change that.
Great. Sam in Coos Bay, Oregon, listening to KBBR. You're on the air with Igor.
Hey, Tom and Igor. This is in regards to Jimmy from Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
I just went to the Washington Post and read an article about Arkansas's unusual plan to expand Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
where they're basically going to take the money they would have gotten from Medicaid, and they're going to use that to buy insurance for anyone below 133% of the federal poverty line, or $15,000. So Jimmy is going to have, for the first 3 years, 100% of his premiums paid for, and then after the first 3 years, he'll have 90% of it paid for.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Sam, yeah, thanks.
Just I'd let you know.
Okay. Thanks for that, Sam. That makes sense to you, Igor?
Yeah, that's if that's the case, and I should have been aware of that, because I know they've been working on it. That again is one of those examples where the secretary is working with these governors to find any way possible to make sure that they fill in that gap, that the plan they come up with, these Republicans can swallow and sell to their legislatures.
Right. Okay. Beatrice in Clearwater, South Carolina. You're on the air with Igor Volsky.
Yes. My question is, I receive Medicare and I'm on a QMB program, which the state actually picks up my premiums, and I'm wondering if this Obamacare plan is going to affect me in any way. It's actually disability Medicaid. It's not regular Medicaid. It's where they pay my premiums, for my Medicare because it's so low. You know, I guess it's low income.
Right.
Yeah. And but the main thing is some of the doctors now will not accept the Medicaid.
So how's this going to affect?
I am now in the process of moving to Georgia because I lost my parents in the month of August.
Oh my.
And I think they offer the QMB program as well.
Okay, Beatrice, let Igor answer that because we're getting close on time here.
The coverage you have should remain. The question in some areas of the country when it comes to Medicaid is Medicaid providers. The reimbursement rates that Medicaid pays providers are very low. They're set by the state, following rules established by the federal government. And so the way to attract more providers, if that's the problem you're asking about, is to probably increase those reimbursement rates. That's a state issue that they're going to have to work out. But yet, providers in Medicaid in some areas of the country has really been a problem.
So, Beatrice, you should be calling and yelling at your state representative and your state senator. Thank you for the call. Tom, in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950, you're on the air with Igor Volsky.
Well, hi there. I'm actually in California listening online.
Oh, okay.
I'm in my late 50s, and I got laid off and health problems went to a foreclosure in a house, so I'm living in an RV and I have a car to drive to look for work. Well, Medi-Cal denies me, so I haven't had treatment for my medical problems for a couple of years because I have too many assets. So now when I'm looking at the Obamacare plan, there is a 15,600 limit that forces me down into Medi-Cal, which I've been denied for. So can I still, I have people that will pay for my insurance for me, you know, friends and family. Can I still apply for Obamacare over that 15,000 limit if I don't have the income? And the second thing is they say it's paid by tax credits, but if you don't have an income, what about tax credits?
Okay, we just have 30 seconds, Igor.
Yeah, you should be able to go into the exchanges or to go into the expansion there in Medicaid because I think that's the limit's not there anymore, is my understanding. So you should have options in one of those two places.
Okay, so
great, thank you.
Cool, Tom. Thanks a lot for the call and Igor, we've run out the clock again here Yeah, I think we're gonna run out the clock this time, and we'll pick you up another day. Thank you so much for being available to us, and we really appreciate it, Igor. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Tom.
And let me recommend your blog to everybody who's listening and watching. It's thinkprogress.org. We'll be right back. And in our next hour, I want to get into geeky science, and in fact, beyond geeky science, it looks like there's some actual physical brain science that explains things like CEOs, banksters, and Republican politicians. Seriously, stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Thursday. So this is my geeky science day. I so love geeky science because, I just love science. We have been talking, by the way, the last hour, Igor Volsky from the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, was taking your calls on Obamacare. And boy, did I learn a lot about Obamacare. And I hope you did too. And in our first hour, we talked about how the Republicans, by saying to President Obama, we will only raise the debt ceiling. And by the way, this kind of a blackmail demand or extortion demand has never, ever, from the George Washington administration until 2 years ago, has never, ever been made before in history by any Congress. So what they've said to President Obama is we will default the United States, which is a violation of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, by the way, which says that the full faith and credit of the United States shall not be questioned. We will default the full faith and credit of the United States if you do not delay Obamacare for a year In other words, deny health insurance to, you know, 40 million people. Give us the Keystone XL pipeline so that we can take this very, very toxic oil sludge from the tar sands of California, or tar sands of Canada, rather, and get it down to the Gulf Coast where it can be refined. All the poisons and things can be taken out of it and dumped into the air of the United States. And then the refined gasoline and diesel fuel can be shipped to China, England, Brazil, and Mexico. Demand number two. Demand number three, that you've got to dial back the regulations by the EPA so that the Koch brothers and other companies that own these refineries, they can dump more poison in the air and they can make more profit. They can operate more less expensively. And number four, that you stop your oversight of the big banks by blowing up the Consumer Protection Bureau, Elizabeth Warren's creation. Stop doing that to those banksters on Wall Street. Nothing in there for the average American, right? There's something in there for Wall Street billionaires. There's something in there for oil billionaires. There's something in there for China, for Mexico, for England. But for the average American, the only thing they're going to get out of this is that their banks are more likely to blow up their economy again and that their gas prices are going to go up. So how is it possible that people think like that? Okay, this is where geeky science comes in. Let's get geeky on the lack of empathy. Have you ever wondered how a Wall Street CEO or one of these Republican politicians can sleep at night knowing that they just laid off hundreds of thousands of workers and destroyed their lives, or just denied health insurance to 30 million people and people are going to die? Have you asked yourself ever how a Republican can stand for 21 hours straight arguing that poor people don't deserve health care in the richest country in the world, the United States of America? Well, scientists may have found some answers to your questions. Sociopaths and psychopaths often lack feelings of empathy or guilt or remorse. And until now, scientists have been unsure about the neurological reasons for why sociopaths and psychopaths lack empathy, and in fact, actually sometimes get pleasure from other people's pain. Well, now it turns out that when people with psychopathy think about others in pain, the brain areas necessary for feeling empathy and compassion for other people fail to become active. They fail to connect with other important parts of the brain involved in processing and decision-making. To reach their findings, scientists took MRIs of the brains of 121 prison inmates in a medium-security prison. Each of the study participants was shown pictures that illustrated physical pain, like a finger being caught in a door. The participant was asked then to imagine that this accident had happened to themselves, and then imagine again that it had happened to somebody else. Then the participant was assessed with a diagnostic tool called a PCLR, in order to identify their degree of psychopathic tendencies. Next, the participants were divided into three groups: highly, moderately, and weakly psychopathic. Here's what they found. When the highly psychopathic studies participants imagined pain to themselves, they showed a typical neurological response in the brain regions associated with empathy for pain. But when these highly sociopathic people imagined others in pain, those pain brain regions failed to become active. Those that were more psychopathic showed an increased response in what's called the ventral striatum region of the brain, an area associated with pleasure when imagining others in pain. The findings of the study suggest that those with higher levels of psychopathy may actually enjoy seeing others in pain. So there you have it. I mean, this is actual, you know, biophysiology. This is neurology. This is, I mean, they put these people on an MRI machine and looked into their brains and said, okay, what's going on? And what they found is that it's about 1% of the population, but there are certain areas that kind of self-select for psychopaths. It's like over 20% of the prison population. And I don't know what percentage of the Republican caucus are psychopaths. I don't know that anybody's ever done a good study. but I would be willing to bet anything that it's higher than among the Democratic caucus. And we know, I mean, if you know, Fortune or Forbes magazine some years back, a couple of years back, we did a whole show on it here. We had the author on and everything. Did this study about how psychopaths can be very, very successful at senior levels of business, particularly in the banking industry, where, you know, they just destroy people's lives, throw them out of their houses, and, you know, walk off with lots and lots of money. It turns out that not only can they sleep at night, not only do they not feel other people's pain, but when they imagine the consequences of their actions causing pain to other people, they feel pleasure. It activates their pleasure centers. I mean, this is an amazing piece of research, which raises the question, how do we deal with psychopaths in our society? I mean, we know how to deal, sort of, with psychopaths who express their psychopathology in ways that we call criminal. Psychopaths who beat other people up. Psychopaths who shoot or kill people. Psychopaths who rob, rape, torture, stuff like that. We know how to deal with them. We put them in jail. We separate them. We segregate them from the rest of society. But what about the high-functioning psychopaths? What about the ones who will make a business decision or a political decision knowing that it's going to cause people severe pain, that it's going to lead to, well, the BBC study that I've shared with you several times, you know, this is the report, the BBC reported on this, Wednesday, 18 September 2002, is a 100-year longitudinal study done, and the conclusion, overall, they say the figures suggest that 35,000 people would not have died had the conservatives not been in power. Right. This is a study on suicides caused by conservative economic policies in the UK and Australia. It turns out that these folks, when they make the decision that they know is going to cause people to commit suicide, it's going to cause families to fall apart, it's not just that, you know, they can look themselves in the mirror and then go to sleep. It's that they actually feel pleasure. What do we do about this as a society? Because our business structure has said that what they are doing is legal. It's perfectly legal for the banksters to rip people off. Or if it's not illegal, we're at least not enforcing the law. And it's perfectly legal to be a conservative Republican politician. What do we do?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, I suppose outlawing a libertarian, well, no, that's a bridge too far even for me. I don't have a solution to this, do you? So what do we do about now that we know? I mean, now that the science is in, there's an actual brain physiology. There's a problem, right? It's about 1% of the people, and they actually have an interrupted neural connection in their brain, and you can identify it. And when they imagine another person in pain or see another person in pain, instead of the normal empathetic response that the other 99% of us have, and we're not talking about the economic 99%, but literally the other 99% of us have, instead of having that wince, you know, I mean, it's like I go to movies or watch, you know, TV with Louise, and she's not a psychopath, but she can watch people, you know, having pain on the media and doesn't freak out. I actually jump in my seat. You know, so I, you know, some of us even have an exaggerated response to it, I suppose. But it turns out that these folks not only don't experience the pain of others, they experience pleasure when others are in pain. Their brain circuit, instead of going right, went left, or instead of going left, went, you know, whatever, and it went through, instead of going to the cingulate gyrus, it went to the ventral striatum. I shouldn't reveal my lack of pronunciation for anatomy. But anyhow, it went to that signal went to the wrong part of the brain. What do we do about it? Jonathan in Cary, Illinois, you have a solution?
I believe that some of the only ways that we can really combat these CEOs and these people like higher up in companies that make these bad decisions for our country and end up making people commit suicide more, and as well as just their economic well-being is degraded, is to just teach consumers how to use their spending dollars to support companies that have good morals and CEOs that make good decisions.
Okay. But here's, for example, I'm looking at the Financial Times right now online, and the lead story is Dimon, that would be Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank, one of the big six banks that owns those banks in aggregate own over 65% of the GDP, assets worth over 65% of the GDP of the United States. Dimon at Department of Justice for talks over $11 billion settlement. J.P. Morgan resists admission of guilt over MBS issues. And then there's a whole series of smaller stories about that. And essentially the story is about how, you know, Jamie Dimon is, you know, resisting saying that he did anything wrong, even though his bank committed crimes and he presumably participated in them. And here's the question to you, Jonathan. In many workplaces now, people are paid with what looks like a credit card that every pay period gets refilled. And in some states, people get their welfare benefits with a credit card that gets refilled every month. And those credit cards, in some cases, are issued by J.P. Morgan Chase. What do you do?
That's an extremely problematic issue if people are literally forced to use, like, revenue that's directly linked to a certain company. Yep. As they're getting paid. I suppose to those Americans, it's all about, it's kind of like the system that those CEOs and J.P. Morgan have been setting up since, you know, the 40s and 50s, to where people can't get jobs that are, like, giving them real money and real benefits that can be used in, like, today's society. It's all just about, like, so people have to survive. They just have to work those 40 and 50 hour work weeks.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. I think we need to be talking about this more. I think we need to be calling these folks out. We need to be recognizing them for who they are. Jamie Dimon has testified before Congress in ways that many of us think were less than candid and less than honest. I'm not saying that I know that he's a psychopath. I don't. I don't think anybody can. But it would be really interesting to get him on one of those MRI machines and see what happens. Jonathan, thanks for the call. Sarah in Young America, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Tom. To me, the answer seems obvious, which would be to charge them with crimes, throw the book at them, and then make them do their time. But it seems to me as though the real issue is that the justice system has almost created a group of untouchables. So it seems as though there's maybe a ring of psychopaths, because it's unbelievable that more people have not been charged with crimes from the financial collapse.
Nobody's been charged.
You know what I mean? So it seems to even go beyond the psychopathic banksters. It's almost like they're untouchable.
Yeah, it's like an unholy alliance between psychopathic banksters and psychopathic politicians to protect each other and to scratch each other's backs, because the banksters are channeling hundreds of millions of dollars to the politicians. There's ads right now trashing Terry McAuliffe in the Virginia governor's race, and therefore elevating Ken Cuccinelli, Mr. Ultrasound. And these ads are being paid for by a Wall Street hedge fund manager. And he's the same hedge fund manager who was doing the same thing for Art Robinson. We had Peter DeFazio on this program talking about it a couple of years ago. Art Robinson, who wanted to, you know, put radioactive waste in everybody's home because it's good for you. I mean, it's like, this is crazy stuff. Sarah, thank you for the call. We need to do it. Mary in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. We have a minute to the break. Mary, a thought?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I recently read articles, professional articles on sociopaths, and it indicated that there's two professions that sociopaths tend to go into, and one is politics, and the second is business.
Right. Wow.
And
so you're
that explains.
You're proving my point.
That explained a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we do? I mean, in politics and in business, because business is essentially sociopathic to begin with. There's no conscience to business. Profit is the highest goal, not the best thing for society. I mean, you can argue that in politics, at least, you know, the Constitution says we're doing this for the public good. But how do we change this? Should we be changing our economic models? What do you think?
Truly, I don't know, but it would make sense that the politicians being sociopaths themselves are having sociopathic tendencies would protect businessmen.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Mary, thank you for sharing that with us. I think that we should look at capitalism itself. We need to be changing the structure of our business model to make it less sociopathic friendly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Have you had experience with a sociopath or a psychopath? What did you do? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and this is interesting. Some people have some pretty strong opinions about this. Tim in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the town where I was born. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? We've talked before.
Uh-huh.
I'm an ex-union sheet metal worker.
Oh, great.
What we had here in, we have the Mackinac Institute, and they had a meeting about a month ago or less, and we had them all corralled. We could have took the schizophrenics and lined up machines and ran their heads through them to find out what's going on, because our great governor has already started his campaign for governorship.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he came out with was that a nerd job can only be run with a nerd. And that's was his first premise on his the TV.
It's Rick Snyder?
Now, I think
he's trying to get the nerd vote?
He's had it. He's the one that put the right to work for less law into effect on a Saturday afternoon
right. In
the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
After we voted it down.
So,
and after the whole state voted it down.
So are you suggesting that Rick Snyder is a psychopath?
I think they all are. Everybody that meets at the Mackinac Institute, I think, is.
Huh.
They all got to be, because they're trying to formulate some type of strategy to keep the American worker at bay.
Yeah, it may be. I mean, this is, you know, the science is fascinating, that psychopaths actually feel pleasure when they imagine other people in pain, and if these guys are promoting public policies that cause families to break up, that cause people to have pain, that cause people not to get health care when they need it, they may be psychopaths. Tim, thank you for the call. It's a very real possibility. Sue in Morgan, Pennsylvania. Hey, Sue, you have a thought on how do we deal with politicians who are psychopaths?
Well, first of all, hi, doctor. I'm proud of you. Second of all, I divorced my sociopath.
Okay.
Third of all, if you're college educated, you should be held to a higher standard. Absolutely no excuses. You should be prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
If you run for an office and you have a platform and you lie, first lie, you are prosecuted. Second lie, that's it. Jail time, you're out, you're fired. If you're incompetent in real life, you have to pay.
Well, I think the theory,
this is real life that's affecting all of our lives.
Yeah.
And you just say, well, that's politics. That's no excuse.
Well, it is an excuse, actually. The Supreme Court has said it's an excuse. They've said the political.
Well, they're wrong, and we need to get them out, too.
Right.
You know,
okay. I can identify a couple of psychopaths on the Supreme Court. I'm with you. Sue, thank you. Very well said. And at the very least, if somebody, you know, if they lie on their platform, they should be removed from office, in my opinion, and very quickly. Kathy in Princeton, Wisconsin, you have a thought on psychopathic politicians?
Yes. Thank you, Tom, for all you and your team do.
Thank you.
In some states, the legislature have passed a law that welfare recipients have to be drug tested. Well, because politicians are servicing us, the public, I think we should have a mental evaluation before they can take office.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be available for the public to see. And then if they are psychopaths, that would be part of the testing.
Then we
now, you're never going to get a politician to vote that in. I doubt it, but I think we do have the right to know because they are representing us, and they're using their brain to represent us.
Well, you know, there's sort of a precedent for that, Kathy. We do have laws that say that they have to reveal to us their net worth and the source of their income. So why not say that they have to reveal to us whether or not they're psychopaths? I'm starting to think that this might make some sense. I don't know. Thank you for the call. Doug in St. Piers, Missouri. Thoughts on psychopathy?
St. Peter. Yes, sir. And I sat there and watched Lloyd Blankfein when he testified.
Before Congress.
Committee, mm-hmm. Before Congress. And he said that he was doing the work of God. And you can see him smiling. These guys believe it. They think they are the, I can't put the way I normally would put it, so I'm stumbling a little bit.
Well, they call themselves masters of the universe, you know. It's...
Yeah, and you know what? I've got a brother who, it's not even worth talking about. There's people a whole lot smarter than them. If you put them out on an island by themselves, they'd be dead in 3 days.
Yeah, it'd be Lord of the Flies revisited. I wonder if because their brains are wired wrong, this 1% of psychopaths who tend to be a higher percentage than 1% within the business world and within the political world, I wonder if because their brains are wired wrong and they experience pleasure when they see other people in pain rather than experiencing empathetic pain, I wonder if that causes them to believe, since they're experiencing pleasure, that what they're doing is the morally correct thing to do. And so they would say something like, yes, throwing 100,000 people out of their homes by ripping them off on their mortgages is God's work because it makes me feel good. So it must be right because that's typically the measurement that people use. I'm just thinking out loud here, but I'm wondering. Doug, thank you for the thought-provoking call. Sean in Chicago. Hey, Sean, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I've never called in. I do enjoy your show, though.
Thank you.
You do a fantastic job. I was just wondering if you had ever heard of Ron Johnson's psychopath test.
I have heard of Ron Johnson. I've never read his work, at least that I can recall.
It's a pretty interesting read. He references Robert Hare a lot. I think Robert Hare is pretty much an authority on the subject of psychopath. He wrote a book called Snakes and Suits, kind of along the lines of what you're describing.
Oh, there. Snakes and Suits. I've read that book. I haven't, I didn't read the book word for word, but I interviewed the author, and so I spent probably 3 hours skimming through the book and reading pieces of it. I'm quite familiar with it. It's an excellent book.
Yeah, I kind of heard a little bit about it myself with Ron Johnson referring to it. I've never actually read it myself.
Yeah.
But I thought he did a good job of kind of putting you at ease. I mean, just knowing that there are the psychopaths that are out there, and again, like you're saying, in these positions of power,
right?
It could be pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
But
he did
a really good job of kind of asking the question, what exactly is it?
Right.
And I think one of the important distinctions is that it's not quite the same thing as like a schizophrenic.
Yeah, no, it's a completely different thing from schizophrenia. Thank you, Sean, for the call. You know, prior to the 1890s, every state in the Union had a law that said that the first purpose of incorporation for every corporation must be to serve the public good. The second purpose must be to make money. After the charter monitoring era, which was kicked off by John Rockefeller, who I think was probably a psychopath, after the charter mongering era, all those laws went away. And ever since the 1890s or the early 1900s, The purpose of every corporation in America has explicitly been to make a profit no matter what, no matter how many people are hurt, no matter how many people are killed. If you can do it within the boundaries of the law, make a profit, you're doing the right thing. I think we should go back to the way it was, where we said, where our charter laws, our state corporate charter laws, explicitly said that the first purpose, and this is a purpose by which the secretaries of state measure these corporations and determine whether they will be allowed to exist year to year, is whether they are serving the public in which they live. And if they are not serving the public, then they cease to exist. The corporation gets the death sentence. Jack in Bellis Falls, Vermont. Hey, Jack, you worked with psychopaths?
Yeah, well, I worked in adolescent treatment in a residential facility associated with the local hospital, which is a large psychiatric hospital. Mm-hmm. So it was adolescents, but they'd be inpatient and they'd come to us in the residential programming, and we'd try to get them ready to go back into society or go home to live with their parents or get a job or whatever they're going to do.
We have a little less than a minute, so what did you learn?
Yeah, okay, interesting. I went in one day and program manager said, here, read this. There was an article written by a doctor that said, basically, people with sociopathic behavior, you manage that individual. In other words, in the psychiatric setting. So in society, you basically have an individual that you're not going to necessarily fix. So
right.
You have to be very careful when dealing with that individual. And then some will jump from sociopath into psychopathic behavior when they become adults or later in their teen years, and they often are the ones that commit very violent crimes and have no compassion for any human beings. But sociopaths can operate very comfortably in our society.
Right, high functioning sociopaths.
Job.
Yeah, and this is, and they're overrepresented in politics and business. This is a real problem. Jack, thanks for sharing that. And I think spot on. You can't fix them. You can only manage them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And unlike bipolar disorder or depression or schizophrenia or other, you know, mental illnesses that are recognized, to the best of my knowledge, there's no medication for psychopaths. Talk media for the sane among us, and has a special meaning today, talking about psychopaths. And whatnot. Eddie in Redwood City, California. Hey, Eddie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Quick comment. Maybe those researchers who did that study, like all researchers, maybe, number one, they're asking or they're saying they need to do more research and therefore need some more funding. But secondly, maybe they're saying, you know, the safest place to hold people like Jamie Dimon, other CEOs, Wall Street executives, and Republican policymakers while we study them is in a prison, you know, temporarily, of course.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, if they've broken a law, but I don't want to go, you know, too far over the top on this, but interesting point. Eddie, thanks a lot for the call. Chris in Decatur, Michigan. Hey, Chris.
Hi there. Been watching your show lately. Pretty good. Thank you. Thank you. I just had to say is we're never going to get rid of the psychopaths in Washington until we get rid of some of the lobbyists.
Well, don't you think some of them are one and the same?
Well, no. I think the ones that are running the government are more so than the lobbyists because they're working for the money, you know, the big businesses, and the people in our government right now are just too greedy.
Yeah. Yeah, it may well be. It'd be really interesting to know if lobbying is one of the industries that attracts psychopaths, too. But I think your point is well taken. Chris, thank you for calling and making that point. Bob in Marseille, Illinois. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, and boy, your show is good today. First off, going back to the fellow that called in that said we've got to watch where we spend our dollars to affect all these people. And basically, we can't do that anymore. Somebody mentioned the fact that you get paid on a debit card, and they charge you a buck and a half to get cash and put it in your bank account, and you can spend it all you want at the local Walmart. It doesn't work. The other thing is, as far as being intelligent consumers, if you look at our 3- and 4-year-olds, they start at 3 and 4, and they are trained to do nothing efficiently but consume.
Yeah. The core message of advertising, and I used to teach this stuff, so I know it. Core message of advertising is the following sentence. You are the most important person in the world. And most ads basically convey that message, and therefore you're entitled to have skin that looks perfect. You're entitled to have, you know, the best sleep possible. You're entitled to have a car that's going to make, you know, the girls or the guys' jaws drop, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You are the most important person in the world. And that's essentially a sociopathic message. At least it's a narcissistic message. And I'm with you, Bob. Our advertising industry is training our children to, at the very least, be narcissists, and that's not a good thing, and we should do something about that, too. Judy in Northampton, Mass., listening to WHMP. Hey, Judy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You're my hero. I'm a therapist, or I was a therapist until I retired last year, and I have a few points to make, and I hope I can kind of get them all in. They're not all connected exactly. I guess the general opinion that I have is that this is connected in, this sociopathy is connected in with the human condition. You know, it's just the churches have been trying to solve these problems, and then the churches get taken over by sociopaths and that sort of thing. So it's not something that's going to be easily solved. And When I stopped working, I kept my psychological hat on, and I family problems came up, and I kind of kept, you know, thinking in those terms and what I saw with the people that were doing this and saying that and causing the problems. And if I would try to introduce a point that had to do with something I was seeing in the psychology of the people I was talking to, they would just throw it out the window. They completely rejected it. So I think that basically people aren't yet up to thinking, realizing that they are psychological creatures and that they have, you know, that these things affect their thinking. People tend to think in terms of religious right and wrong, black and white thinking, blame, or not wanting to be blamed. And those are the things that dominate the way people are looking at things.
Yeah.
So that would have to, you know, further education, and I don't know how long that's going to take. Also, one of the reasons that sociopaths can get so much power is that in terms of individual relationships and the government and groups and organizations in general, is that they have an ability to be very charismatic and charming and tell you what you want to hear, you know, like the advertisements. They're so, you know, they give the appearance of being very understanding and caring, and you give them the power. And then, of course, you know, if you find out later that they weren't doing any such thing as caring, and it was all about them. So that's a very important thing to remember. You said, well, what do you do? Well, personally, you get away from them. If they're in your life, you run in the other direction. As far as I heard a study where they took prisoners and they were the thing that you said at the beginning about how they can't feel the pain of other people only when it applies to them, and they have these programs where over and over and over they present situations in role playing where the sociopath can eventually make some kind of brain connection between, that's like when I feel that way. Oh, yeah.
So it can be taught, really?
Yeah, but it's not, you know, and of course you're not going to subject politicians to.
Yes. Eric Cantor, let me have a conversation. Yeah, right. Judy, thank you for sharing that and all the insights that you have. I much appreciate it. Thanks for listening to WHMP. Coming up tomorrow. Get ready for the weekend right here. Up first, it's Brunch with Bernie, America's Senator Bernie Sanders, taking on all the important issues of the week affecting you and taking your questions. Plus, anything goes Friday. You get to choose what to talk about. Well, I got a few things, too. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does begin with you. Tag your it. get out there and occupy something. Okay? We'll see. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.